everyone, and welcome to Minute 24 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is J-Dub of Dubsism. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
And thanks for having me back. This segment brought to you by the good people at Action Rental Car. Remember, for action, it's action.
That was tomorrow. That was yesterday. But yeah, that's fine. But no, that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, you never know. They might. They're finished jaywalking by today, so you know it's not as much of a problem. But whatever.
And in today's episode,
so minute 24 begins with John and Zeus slowing down as they get onto the island in the middle of the street. And ends with the phone continuing to ring. So we ended things yesterday with John and Zeus jaywalking across the way. Now, again, as I mentioned earlier, I've been to this actual area. So basically, the subway entrance right on that corner, right next to where John and Zeus are attempting to go to the phone, is basically an island in the middle of all of the different cross streets and stuff like that. So they're on this island basically, and then we have Zeus say, "Is that the phone?" And you know, the two of them start walking towards what we presume to be the phone, and then they give us a shot of a car that is pulling up on the side of the road, you know, in the middle of this area in Manhattan, 72nd Street in Manhattan. And we can see some signs for different things. So one of the things we see is we see a sign for Gold Mine Jewelers, which I did a lot of searching for what Gold Mine Jewelers is in New York. And the only thing that I could find out is that as of today, they've been around for 31 years. So what it basically means is they opened up not long before this movie came out, because if this movie is only 29 years old, so it must have opened in 1993. And, you know, they also have a website. And, you know, they talk about that their commitment to providing the highest quality jewelry and exceptional customer service. So I guess it's a good jewelry store that's able to stay open for 31 years. So that shows a lot.
Well, I mean, started with Action Rental Car. Now it's this jewelry stuff. Like, we should really getting paid for these plugs.
Nah, I do it for the fun of it. I'm good. It's, you know, I think of myself like Bob Zemeckis, you know, that you know, when he did Castaway, how he didn't ask for permission from FedEx, you know, and just gave them the free plugs. So that's what we're doing here. So, you know, and we're not as big budget as Castaway is. So makes sense. And next door to the jewelry shop is we see a sign that says Häagen-Dazs. Okay. Are you familiar with Häagen-Dazs?
Yes. It's, a very good, rich ice cream that is just instant death for diabetics.
Okay. Instant death for diabetics is a problem. So if one is a diabetic, you should stay away.
Well, as a diabetic, yes, I would definitely stay away from it, because it is the express route to, you know, losing toes and all of the other fun things that go along with that. But hey, if you like Häagen-Dazs, knock yourself out.
You're talking about it's
eat my share.
It's any type of ice cream, or just specifically Häagen-Dazs?
Well, Häagen-Dazs is really bad because Häagen-Dazs has a really high sugar content.
Okay. All right. So Häagen-Dazs was founded in 1960, 64 years ago in New York, in the Bronx. Their headquarters are currently located in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They have over 900 locations around the world, and they sell ice cream. You know, that's the idea. It was created by a couple named Reuben and Rose Mattis. And they started out only with three flavors: vanilla, chocolate, and coffee. And in 1976, they opened their first retail store. And then they were by Pillsbury in 1983. And they now have ice cream bars, ice cream cakes, sorbet, frozen yogurt, gelato, a whole bunch of different things. And I've
So you're telling me there's nobody that was named, there was nobody actually named Hagen and or Dazs
That
involved in
is
this.
correct. That is correct.
Other myth dies.
I mean, I can explain to you where it came from. In 1959, right before they created this, it came out in 1960. So in 1959, he liked the Danish sounding name of Häagen-Dazs as a tribute to Denmark's exemplary treatment of the Jews during World War II. And they used it as foreign branding. And the whole idea was is that people would look at it and say, "Ooh, it's a foreign a foreign type of ice cream, so it must be tastier," or something like that.
Well, we Americans are very guilty of this, you know.
What's very interesting is that the founder, Reuben Mattis, he was born in Poland. He was a Jew who was born in Poland, and he and his family moved to New York in 1921, and he had an uncle who had an Italian lemon ice business in Brooklyn. So they started making at home ice pops and then chocolate covered ice cream bars and sandwiches and things like that. So it obviously gave him a taste for what he would have in the future. But so it's an interesting little story of how it happened. Now, for me, there's a little bit of a story with it also. I mean, I grew up in the suburb of Detroit, and I know that one of our neighbors, he was the distributor of Häagen-Dazs in the Detroit area. So I remember that we would always, and my parents were good friends with them. So we would always get ice cream from them, and I remember that every year they'd have the state fair that they would have. Stand at, and we would always go there because of them. My siblings used to work at their stand and things like that. So for me, I've always known about Häagen-Dazs,
Well, and it's funny you went, the state fair route, because it's exactly what I was thinking, is that, in the terms or over the course of the week, we've discussed at length the hot dog and now ice cream, and it doesn't get much more state fair than those two things, does it?
There you
I
go.
mean, unless you want to get
Probably
into
not.
what we do now with, like, the deep fried candy bars and the stuff that'd really kill me, but
Yeah, I was gonna say those must be really good for diabetics.
they're not good for anybody. I'm just smart enough to know that, yeah.
Probably not.
But I mean,
Yeah,
they are tasty
that's
if you really
probably
want
true.
to be decadent about it.
Right. Okay. And then at this point, we see the inside of the car across the street, and we see that both Connie and Joe are in that car. And Connie gives her a report. Okay, they made it to the phone, but there's a problem. And you hear over the phone, "Well, what do you mean? How big of a problem?" And then at this point, Joe goes, "Oh, about 300 pounds." And then the shot changes, and we see the two of them walk over towards the payphone, and we see a large woman on the phone. And she starts talking, and we hear her say, she's on the phone. So she's, and they're probably going to end up having to get an operation. And, tries to interrupt her and says, "Ma'am, excuse me, ma'am. We need the phone for official police business." And she goes, "Do you mind, honey? I'm a cop. I need the phone right now. I'm sorry, but I cannot." And then Zeus gets in the way, hangs up the phone, and goes, "Get off the damn phone, lady. Police business." "Well, I never." And then Zeus looks over at John and goes, "I can get used to this." And then John says to her, "Sure, you can find a phone across the street, ma'am." So this is also a great little segment between the two of them. We see the different ways that they deal with things here. And so first of all, the actress who plays the woman on the phone, her name is Barbara Hipkiss, and she has one IMDb credit for this movie, but she has a double credit. She is, the woman on the phone, and also she is a casting associate. So apparently the casting department just needed somebody to play that part, and she must have volunteered, to go to play it.
Did she get
And
paychecks that way?
I'm assuming she did, but because from what I understand, and I discussed this a few weeks ago at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, I mean, I'm not sure the exact rules of SAG, but I believe that if you have a line in a movie, you get paid a certain amount of money. It doesn't
That's
matter.
100% true.
Yeah, I don't know how much, but you at least get the minimum. I mean, here she, what does she have? Four lines. She says they're probably going to end up having an operation. Do you mind? I'm sorry, but I cannot. And then she says, "Well, I never." So there you go. She got four lines. So I wonder if they pay per, per word or per letter or how that works. Don't really know what the
I'm gonna go with she got standard union scale for that.
probably. I wonder if she gets residuals for it. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm gonna guess her points come off the bottom.
Yeah, probably. So, I mean, it's interesting to see the different ways that both John and Zeus are trying to do this. John is being very polite. You wouldn't necessarily expect that of him based on what we've seen of him at the beginning from the beginning of this movie. He's in a grumpy mood, but he's actually acting very nicely to her, trying to get her, to calmly hang up the phone, and even when he throws the line at her that you can find another phone across the street. It's funny for us looking at this now, almost 30 years in the future, because everyone now has a cell phone. Who uses payphones at all? Can you remember the last time?
Well, if you can find
Right. Can you even remember the last time you used a payphone?
the last time I used a payphone was in O'Hare Airport, probably 20 years ago, because my cell phone was dead. And even then, it was there's no putting coins in those phones. It was a card swipe because it's like $8.
Oh wow. Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, and that's really the only place I've ever seen a payphone anymore is in an airport. Once in a while, you can come across a gas station that still has one, but they get rid of those real quick because they're usually populated by meth heads.
Meth heads and Superman,
No, they don't even have booths anymore. That's just a phone bolted to a
Right,
wall
that's true.
somewhere. I can't
remember the
Phones.
last time I saw a payphone around here. Don't know. I mean, obviously, cell phones have become so pervasive that it doesn't really matter anymore. People, a lot of people don't even have home line. You don't have a landline anymore.
I don't have one.
We do, but it's rarely used. My mother and mother-in-law call us on it, and wrong numbers. That's pretty much everyone who calls on our landline.
Let me real quick aside about landlines. I had a buddy of mine when I lived in Minnesota, got himself a DUI, and part of his punishment was he had to be on house arrest for a while. Well, part of being on house arrest is you have to have a landline that they can connect the little monitor thing for your ankle bracelet to. So we go down to the phone company, we get him a landline, we hook everything up, and the phone rings. Not 20 minutes later, the phone rings. It was a telemarketer. That's a true story.
That's really funny. And so at this point, John starts to berate Zeus and says, "Let's get something straight. I'm the only one here on official police business. Don't ever do that again." I mean, Zeus knows how to hold his side up here. He knows how much John needs him more than he needs John. And so he's not going to take that from John. And you know, as they're having this conversation, it's really funny. If you look in the background, which I know you don't, because you know, you focus on the foreground as opposed to the background. So first of all, you have this guy in this like bright orange shirt or jacket that's talking to another guy on a bike, which I just thought was really funny that this is all going on in the background. And then you see a van pull up behind them that says on it Hobart Vulcan. And you have like the address and phone number. And I mean, this is a real phone number. I mean, I looked it up actually to see if this place still exists. And it actually exists in Long Island City in New York. You know, it's a company that sells a kitchen supplies, you know, like industrial ovens and stuff like that. So I just thought it was very, very funny that we can actually make that out. You know, they got their free advertising both in the movie and now by us. You know. So if anybody
Absolutely.
wants, you can call 718-361-1010. And they're located at 4848 Fifth Street in New York, 11101, which as I said is in Long Island City. Which
I wish I would have known you had this information. We could have come up with a little jingle. We could have done a full-on commercial
maybe,
for them,
maybe. Yeah.
you
Well,
know.
next time. I've actually been to Long Island City because I think it was CBS has their like New York studios there, and I went to a taping of a show once in 2001, a TV show called Welcome to New York with Jim Gaffigan, which did not last very long. They didn't even make it through a season, but it was still fun to go and fun to watch. And then the phone rings, and we hear a random voice on the side say, "I don't know." No idea who's saying that. And then the phone rings again. And John starts to realize that he doesn't have much of a choice. He needs you see the light bulb go up in his head that he needs to start possibly responding to Zeus. And then the phone rings again. And he goes, "All right, I need you." And then we get another phone ring. And he goes, "All right, I need you more than you need me." And then the phone rings again, and that's how the minute ends. So we get a lot of phone ringing. You know, it goes back to what we were talking about with It's a Wonderful Life, that you know, whenever you hear a bell ring, so an angel gets their wings. So who knows what's happening now when the phone rings? Maybe
Well,
the phone
apparently
ring
what
is
happens is,
what
you
takes
know,
away the wings of the angels. I don't know.
actually, I was going to say that, you know, when this phone ring, a fat woman gets insulted, apparently.
Well, no, she got insulted before it rang. So
You see, never let details get in the way of a good joke,
that's
but
true.
okay, never
That's true.
mind. Okay.
All right. So do you I don't have anything else for this minute. Do you have your sports analogy for this minute?
Well, the thing that got to me about this scene is, you know, it's so obviously Samuel L. Jackson's moment to pull a power play. You know, you need me more than I need you, blah blah blah. The whole "I need you need me." I just kept hearing that song in my head. People, people who need people, you know. And it took me to the sports analogy, which is, this is really, you know, the relationship between Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson is really turning into that classic buddy picture trope thing we talked about earlier. And it's two guys that got to get together. Their success depends on each other, even though they can't stand each other. One of the best examples of this came from the world of baseball about 20 years ago when, Barry Bonds was breaking all the home run records and he was hitting 70 in a season and doing all that sort of thing. But the guy that was in the lineup around him to quote unquote protect him was another guy named Jeff Kent. And those two guys, oil and water. I mean, you could not find two guys that couldn't get along. There were so many times where we heard stories about they would have to be separated in the clubhouse because they were ready to kill each other. But on the field, they were magic together as being back to back in that San Francisco Giants lineup. Barry Bonds would have never hit 73 home runs if you didn't have Jeff Kent around to be the guy that, you know, you had to you couldn't not pitch to both of them. You had to pitch to one. That the idea of protection in a lineup, that's how that works. Jeff Kent and Barry Bonds were very much what Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson are turning into at this moment in this minute.
Oh, wow. That is a great analogy between the two of them. I mean, I've always been a fan of Jeff Kent. I had him on many of my fantasy baseball teams years ago. And I even remember that he was on the season of Survivor, where he didn't tell anybody. He didn't even tell anybody that he was on it, that it was him.
Jeff Kent has featured prominently in some other hidden sports analogies with me. I won't put those right here, but okay. So you're a Jeff Kent fan. All right. Jeff Kent, Hall of Famer.
Unfortunately, probably not.
Well, I mean, the writers aren't gonna put him in. I mean, that's clear. But I mean, if you had a vote, is Jeff Kent on your ballot?
I don't think so. Don't think so.
I gotta disagree. I think there's only been two second basemen in the entire history of this game with six straight 100 RBI seasons. One is Rogers Hornsby. The other is Jeff Kent.
Interesting. Okay. How many votes did he get? Do you remember? Before he was
not nearly
before enough, well, that I know before every, he was bumped off the ballot.
I don't think he ever cracked 40%, and you got to have 75 to get in.
Correct.
And you know, him and Barry Bonds had the same problems that nobody in the media liked them. So if the writers,
well, don't Barry like Bonds, you, you're not Barry Bonds has other problems.
Well, I didn't want to get into that. That's true. That's a whole other discussion. Yes. That I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. Again, if you want to at somebody, send it to me. We can have the Barry Bonds Hall of Fame conversation. But since you brought up Jeff Kent, you kind of surprised me because I know you're not a big
I'm not sports a sports guy, but I'm a baseball guy.
But
you know, up until about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Probably up until 10 years ago. After that, I stopped playing fantasy baseball, I think, around 10, 11 years ago. And then when I started looking at players recently, I don't recognize anybody. You know, they've completely changed the face of the game, I guess you could say.
That's fair. No, I can understand that. And yeah, if you remember as an ex-fantasy baseball guy myself, it changes how you look at things because, you know, you're looking for guys to put in your lineup, guys that produce, guys that you get way more number heavy and way more looking into what guys actually do rather than just who they are. But that's why I also asked, because if you're a fantasy baseball guy, I don't know how you can look at Jeff Kent and not say he's a Hall of Fame caliber player. But
right. Okay, that's fine. I mean, I'm also very much removed from all of that. So, you know, at the time I was going, you know, looking at stats and stuff like that. I remember that Jeff Kent was a guy that was on my team and I liked him. I didn't remember, you know, I could not have thrown out the stat that he's done, you know, that he had over 100 RBI 6 years in a row, you know, which I think is great. But, you know, I don't know. I remember when I would play fantasy baseball. So everyone would always ask me, oh, what's your favorite team? And I'm like, I don't have a favorite team. My favorite player is because they get me points. You know, that's the way I looked at it.
Yep, that's exactly
how that is correct. And which is why I loved it. So the script. We finally have something in the script that is a little more substantial than what we've had in the last few days. So it says, the station entrance is on the island in the middle of the intersection, directly above the train track. Next to the station is a news kiosk. Next to the kiosk is a payphone. McLean and Zeus run up to the phone. Across the street, a beat-up Chevy Impala parks. Detectives Walsh and Lambert are in it. Walsh speaks into CB radio. Now, I just want to point out that Connie is not in the script, this version of the script at all. It's always Walsh and Lambert. So then Walsh says, they're at the payphone now. Over. Then we go to the payphone and we see a woman, 30s, well-dressed, is talking as McLean and Zeus approach. Claire, you should see the sale at Zabar's. Ma'am, she ignores him. Ma'am, we need to use. Zeus reaches into the cubicle. Get the fuck off the phone, lady. He disconnects the phone. This is a police business. Hey! Horrified, she grabs her bags and moves off. There's another phone across the street, ma'am. McLean turns to Zeus. Let's get something straight. I'm on police business. You're not. Let's get something straight. You need me more than I need you. If you don't like the way I do things, fine. I quit. And then the phone begins to ring. Zeus stops, turns, eyeing the ringing phone. McLean and Zeus lock eyes, glaring at each other. He says you have to be here. Zeus doesn't move. All right. I need you. Zeus doesn't move. McLean sighs. All right. I need you more than you need me. And that's the way the script ends here for this particular minute. So, you know, they take out the whole extraneous part about who the woman is that's on the phone and stuff like that. Yeah, it works either way. I think in the script, Zeus is a little more harsh than he really needs to be. I think it works off. I think it works. Well, yeah. I think it works better for him to say, get off the damn phone, lady. And that's it, you know. All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Eng Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is somewhat of a revenge story. It could be a sibling revenge story or something else. So what have you got for us, John? You probably have a good revenge story, you know, that's probably related to some guy, you know, throwing a baseball at someone else or something like that. I don't know.
Well, excuse me. Good revenge story, possibly. That's for our audience to decide. It does not have anything to do with baseball. It may, in fact, be, remember when we started with Monday's edition that I said this might be the thing that gets me not invited back? This story is why I'm saying this might be my swan song here on the Movie Rob podcast. This goes back to my days as about a 13, 14-year-old.
Oh, I thought it was something that you
kid.
Like did. I thought you were going to say that you planned some revenge against me. You know, so. Okay, I'm relieved.
No. I don't know what you've done that would merit such a thing. Unless, you know, were you a Barbie doll collector?
No, I was not.
Okay, then this story won't apply to you because I used to mow lawns and I had a neighbor girl who was about 10 years younger than me. She's 5'6", somewhere in there, prime age for Barbie doll stuff. And she used to leave her Barbie dolls out in the lawn that I was mowing, and I would catch hell from her parents if I ran over one with a lawnmower. Imagine, you know, Barbie doll versus lawnmower is not a good thing. So I used to have to keep an eye out for these damn things, which cut into my time. And, you know, and you could keep telling this girl, quit leaving your damn Barbie dolls in the lawn, and she wouldn't listen. So I started to have to escalate things, you know. So one day I decided, okay, well, you can take Barbie's head off. So pop Barbie's head off, put G.I. Joe's head on. Like, here you go, little girl. Here's your transgender Barbie. And, okay, now you would think that would be traumatic enough to get her to stop leaving the damn Barbie dolls outside. Nope. Well, then I realized that Barbie dolls' heads are hollow. So I took Barbie's head off. Filled it up with ketchup, put Barbie's head back on, leaned Barbie up against a wall, and shot her in the head with a BB gun. So now we have crime scene Barbie. That was enough to get that was enough to get that little girl to go crying to her parents. And of course, she never left her Barbie dolls outside again because, you know, let's be honest, I made it look like an episode of Law and Order. And I don't know whatever happened to that girl because they ended up moving away. I just like to think that, you know, probably she's in some sort of lesbian terrorist group now. But, yeah, that's a terrible story. I would like to say goodbye to all the Movie Rob listeners because I will not be back after that story. I mean, this is an audio podcast, but we're recording it using Skype. So there's a video component. I can see the look on Rob's face. Goodbye, loyal Movie Rob listeners.
No, not at all. Not at all. it's a great revenge story. So there you go. It fits within.
It's also completely horrible. And you know, I'm a bad human being. You know, there it is.
No, but you did it when you were 13 or 14. So you know, there's been a few years that have passed since then. I'm sure you've made your amends.
Saved by the statute of limitations.
There, that makes sense. All right, great. Would you like to once again tell people where they can find
you? If you're a Barbie fan and you want to tell me what a terrible guy I am, it's Dubsism, Dubsism. It's the world's most interesting independent sports blog. It's a first page search result on Google. You can email me dubsism@yahoo.com. You can find me on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Dubsism. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. Just search me, Dubsism. I'm out there.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher. You might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net, or you can minute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay, Barbie killer!
Marching home again, hoorah, hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.